All right. Good evening, everyone. This is the regular semi-monthly meeting of the Pacifica National Board's Finance Committee. It is Tuesday, December 11th at 5:40 p.m. Pacific, 8:40 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. My name is Tracy Rosenberg. I am a listener-rep from KPFA. I'm the chair of this committee. We're going to start by having our secretary, R. Paul Martin, from WBAI, call the roll.
Okay. Ken Aaron.
Here.
Jim Boyd.
Here.
Bill Crozier.
Here.
Marcus Jeter. Campbell Johnson. Kim Kaufman.
Here.
R. Paul Martin here. Tracy Rosenberg.
Here.
Alex Steinberg. Barbara Whipperman.
Here.
Okay, is there anybody whose name I missed? All right, we have seven. That's quorum.
Okay, terrific. Thanks a lot, R. Paul. So we have a fairly fast agenda, at least on the draft level tonight. It was sent out way too late this afternoon between about 4 and 4:30, and I apologize for that. But if someone in front of a computer and can read it out loud.
Yeah, I can read it.
If you would.
All right. Roll calls. Approve agenda. Approve minutes. Approve consolidated budget. Bond report. Kim thing about donations / grants and accounting protocols.
Tracy apologizes for the Kim thing. She just
didn't quite
remember what we had agreed to call it, and if you'd like to take a friendly modification there, feel free.
I'm fine with that because they're really two separate issues. Just say, you know, accounting protocols for grants and donations.
Okay. R. Paul, can you make that change?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other changes or additions to the agenda? Okay. Are there any objections to approving this agenda as modified?
Pardon me. This is Ken. Oh, no. Skip it. No, I changed my mind.
Okay. We can skip it. Any other objections? Okay, then we'll assume that this agenda is approved by the group, and we will go on to the first item, which is approving the consolidated budget. The consolidated budget, by the way, for the record, was produced by the National Office. For those who may not be familiar or who are listening on the stream, the consolidated budget is simply the act of adding together all of the numbers from the seven divisional budgets that both this committee and the PNB has already approved. Since we are a committee of the PNB, we have no power to change these numbers apart from correcting an error if we see one, but we can't rearrange the numbers, change them, argue about them. They've already been approved to be one level higher than us. So what we're basically doing is fairly pro forma, but whatever conversation ensues, and we do want to get this approved tonight because we would like to get the full board to approve it on Thursday, is the idea, since we're already into December. So with that, let's converse. Kim?
Point of order?
Yeah.
Approved minutes?
Oh, that. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. So I believe we have one set from our previous meeting at the end of November, which would have been November 27th.
Correct.
Okay. Those were sent out earlier today. Are there any objections to approving the minutes of November 27th?
Well, I haven't read them, so I'll defer to anybody who has.
So there's two choices. We can either approve them without objections, if you trust your colleagues, or if you wish to abstain for the record, then we'll have to call the roll. What do you want to do, Kim?
Oh, me? I don't care. What does anybody else want to do? I'll go along with, you know.
Thanks.
Has anyone read them? I have.
Okay. I did.
Okay, fine.
Okay. Does anybody feel a strong need to abstain for the record? Okay. Then I'll consider them approved without objection. Is that all we've got on the minutes, Paul? I think so.
That's it.
All right, so that's done. So we're back to the consolidated budget. Same comments apply. So at this point, we will either engage in conversation or someone is free to make a motion to recommend the passage of the consolidated budget to the Pacifica National Board.
This is Jim. I move that we pass the consolidated budget.
Okay.
That was Jim?
Yes.
That was Jim? Are there any objections to that?
I'm just looking at the KPFKs, if it's changed significantly, and it doesn't. Okay.
If you want to take a second to review, feel free. The budget that was, you know, the raw material that was sent to the national office was the final approved KPFK budget. There shouldn't be any problems.
I'll look at it later if there are.
Okay. It also can be amended on the national board level, so if you have a strong concern, express it to your PNB reps, and, you know, they can make a motion. Any other objections, questions, concerns?
I'm just getting it up now, so what is the final bottom line? What is our surplus deficiency or whatever? What are we coming in with?
After capital, it's $186,000. It's a small and a tight surplus, but I think that we understood that when we were approving all these unit budgets with the teeny tiny surpluses, that's what we were going to end up with when we added them all together. Pre-capital, I don't have the document in front of me. It's around $450,000, give or take. And if we can actually achieve that would be good.
Yeah, hello, this is Alex. I'm just letting you know I'm on the call.
Hi, Alex. Welcome.
If I consolidated it, okay, down here. Because I'm trying to look at that, and
each of the station's individual budgets is set up in a similar kind of Excel spreadsheet, and each one is a different tab. So if you want to look at your own station,
I'm looking at the consolidated, and I'm seeing stuff going through September in total, but where I'm trying to find the bottom line here. I'm looking at
should be $186,000 after capital.
218, I think, 536.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah, it's a much bigger number. It's 536.
Right.
Okay, down at the very bottom, 232, surplus deficiency is the 189,467 number. That's it?
Right.
That's the bottom line after capital.
Okay.
What should show on the books is the pre-capital number, because, of course, you're writing off the capital and blah, 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 and depreciating it. But in terms of operating cash.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That's what you'll end up with. Okay.
We'll cross our fingers on that one. Voting with crossed fingers.
Well, the question is always, you know, budget realism versus budget optimism. And again, you know, these were choices that we made as we went through the station budgets kind of one by one. And we certainly had some fluffy projections along the way that we kind of shot down. And when you shoot down fluffy projections, then you end up with smaller surpluses.
Bill,
yeah, I'm not complaining. I agree we should have a very realistic budget so we don't, you know, along around May or June suddenly say, golly, what happened? So, yeah, I mean, I'm not complaining. I'm just making sure I'm seeing it before I'm voting for it. And
no.
I do note that for an organization like this, of this size, that's pretty tight, and let's all hope it works.
Yeah, I mean, for an organization of this size, with some debts as we have built up, it's a very, very tiny surplus. And, you know, and what that says is that we are spending pretty much everything that comes in, and a bit more, and we have been, and we still have a scenario where we'd be in a lot better shape if we either had substantially increased revenue or substantially reduced expenses, and we haven't achieved either of those things. That's a lot better than running $3 million in red ink, and we should be glad that we're not doing that anymore.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that we're already to the place where we would want the organization to be.
Bill for the stack.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, and I assume you got all the information transferred from the individual budgets. I haven't looked at all those other tabs, but it's a lot of work, I guess. But
yes, it was work performed by the national office. I thought for a long time that I would be sitting there doing it myself, and I was very grateful that didn't turn out to be necessary. It was performed by the national office. I'm not, you know, warranting that it's free of errors, but they did work on it and double-check it, and the source documents for it were the budgets that went to the PNB that were signed off on.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, just as a quick double-check, when you added together all of the surpluses for the other units, it came out just about at what was on the consolidated. So, you know, on that level, it seems logical.
Okay. Thanks.
Question?
Mm-hmm.
This may be off topic. I think it might be a little bit. National office, we're not getting reports for
right.
a little while here. I mean, there are no income statements. There's, you know, nothing for the local finance committees to look at regarding our radio stations. And I'm wondering if, I mean, I've already sent an email about this.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if we can start getting again the documents that we had been getting before the usual, you know, let's go crazy and do the budgets phase that we go through every year. But, you know, we could use income statements and other statements, cash flows and balance sheets would be nice, that sort of stuff for assessing the stations and what they did for FY12 and all that.
Absolutely. Okay. I don't want to speak for the national office. That's not right for me to do, and I don't have any authority to do so, but I'll tell you what I understand to be the situation, which is that the need is understood. There was a transition in the CFO position. There's nobody filling it right now, although there are some temporary people doing various things in the national office. But it was a rocky transition. They came into a scenario where they didn't really even have access to basic bank accounts and passwords, and so they'd been doing sort of a forensic-type scenario that, like, they spent several days trying to get the CPB account unlocked and transferring over the bank stuff. And because of that, and with the audit for 2012 kind of looming over their heads, they had to kind of triage a bit and prioritize sort of getting all of the operational stuff in order, followed by the audit, followed by catching up on the financial statements. So they're pretty close to being ready for the audit, which starts on January 2nd, which means that they're up to step 2 out of step 3. And I know that some of us would like for step 3 to have been step 1, but their sense of the priorities that they needed to follow were kind of in that order. And they're just getting up to dealing with the backlogged financial statements now, going forward. Because I had to clean up the end of the fiscal year last year for the audit. So that's my understanding of what's going on. It is frustrating, but I think that it will start to ameliorate in the next couple of weeks. The consolidated budget was a good sign because I kind of said, you know, guys, can you please get this done? Here's our deadline. And they did. So that's good. So my hope is that it won't be too much longer. But that's my understanding of the situation.
Okay, thank you. I was just wanting to get some sort of a report like that. Okay, I look forward to getting stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, hopefully we'll also get someone from the national office on these finance committee calls starting next month. I've been pushing for that. And I think that we will, but the answer has always been I can't, not right now. But my hope is that that will start out fairly soon, like the next call or the call after that. And then they can speak to themselves. Okay, so is there any other discussion on the motion? Okay, are there any objections to the motion? Okay, then we will consider this by acclamation, and we will, in fact, pass this consolidated budget to the PNB as the recommendation of the NSC. Thanks, everyone. Okay, so that moves us down the agenda to the bonds. And the bonds are a motion that was referred to us by the PNB regarding looking into the financial and operational implications of bonding some number of employees that handled cash and what that would cost and what would be involved and the pros and the cons. We had a subcommittee that was supposed to be looking into some of this. I think it was Jim and Kim and Ken, all of whom are here. So if you guys could give us a progress report.
Well, I know Jim did a big report, but I would just like to make a little report first and then see what Jim has to say about this. I ran into Summer, and I mentioned this to her, and she said, oh, we have, and she didn't know the exact technical name, but she said we have, like, dishonest employee liability insurance up to $500,000. So that seems to cover what it is we need, although Jim's information may be somewhat different. But I don't think we knew that we had that, and Summer had just been presented with all of our policies by the HR, you know, who, I don't know, whoever she was talking to. So it seems like we actually do have what we need.
Do you know if that covers all employees of the foundation?
Okay, well, if that's the case, it sounds like a copy of that portion of the policy should be presented as part of the report, and we can do that. I don't think the PNB is realistically going to get to this on Thursday. I'm not inclined to spend a whole lot of time on it, but it's certainly something that could be mentioned.
Further with a question on
the report. Yeah.
What was the amount covered, I mean, the maximum amount?
$500,000,
okay.
Okay. Well, that's good information. Thank you. I had no idea, speaking for myself.
So, I said, gee, Summer, you know, she goes, to get the exact name, I'd have to go in there and look it up and get the book, you know. So, you know, the hard part is, somebody pulling that part of the policy to get the proper name to present, and, you know, I don't know who
okay.
up there could do that.
I think that the information can be provided as part of a report, and if it needs to be pulled to assuage certain people's anxieties that it really exists, then that will happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if the insurance agent is saying that we have that clause in our policy, my guess is we probably have that clause in our policy.
Yeah.
So, okay. So the rest of the committee, Jim, Ken, you have things to add?
Yeah, I've got a few things. I tried to do online research and couldn't get any real numbers from anything online. So I called some of the underwriters, the insurance companies. Got nothing but just automated receptionists with a phone tree. So I called a couple of agents down here in Houston, mm-hmm. and talked with one for a while. It was kind of interesting. Nonprofits, they do have what's called a social organization policy, and it's based on groups of five employees. It's just employees, not volunteers. It's groups of five, and it would be in terms. I asked her on a second call if it would apply to one policy. If we had five locations around the country, would it be one policy for each of for the whole group, or would it be one policy for each location? And she said, no, it could be set up so that each location would have one policy, and they do have a policy for five individuals at a location of the social organization, employees, five employees. For $100,000 coverage, it's a $50 initiation fee and then $181 a year, which is pretty modest.
Yeah.
I'm a little concerned. She seemed a little... This seemed like one of these throwdown policies, kind of like notary bonds, you know, where nobody claims on them. And I'm not sure if in the basis of the policy there may be some exclusions that make it so that you can't recover. Mm-hmm. She said on these policies that you don't need a criminal conviction to file a claim, you just need to show the loss and it was done by one of the employees. One thing I'm wondering is if there would have to be a background check, a criminal check on all your employees who are covered.
And we don't know the answer to that yet. Okay.
No, I don't, to be honest with you, I don't think this is a high sale product to have, and I think we'd almost have to get a copy of the policy and dig through it, because I'm sure the premium, you know, the insurance company probably gets $30 on a thing, you know, so it's not something they're going to spend a lot of time on. And I just wonder if there may be some problems, or if they find out just in grapevine that they don't really want to have a fidelity bond for Pacifica just because of, you know, potential problems. Or kicked out because of radio stations. I mentioned that it was radio stations, and she didn't think there was a problem about that.
Oh.
You know,
yeah.
And I don't know. She was talking about fraternal organizations, but she said what she had written before, that
right.
qualified. But I don't know if it's a nonprofit, if they start looking at business use, you know, kind of one of these 60-40, you know, 70-30 kinds of things, and that may kick it for that.
Okay.
The nice thing about it is that the five employees, you designate the office. And so if you went to a station and had general manager, business manager, maybe development, maybe, I don't know who else, that anyone could handle money.
Membership director. Subscriptions,
You know, but if you had five, that would cover the majority of employees that have direct contact with money. This insurance company, they're licensed in New York, California, Texas, so they could write a policy for the station's plus national offices.
Okay.
But
that's good information.
It seems like for $180 plus $50, isn't very much, but if you already got it covered, I mean, it sounds like this is kind of a throw-in because I'm sure not that many people cover or claim on it. So if our basic insurance policy has $500,000 and it covers all stations, that's the way to go.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. So, but this is good backup information to have, and if the information about the employee dishonesty stuff is not correct, then we may come back to it. And I think for right now, we just kind of leave it on the shelf.
Wow. Here I am. I'm on TV. Oh, my God. This thing is... Okay.
Kim?
Yes?
You're telling us that you're on TV.
What's up? I'm saying I'm on TV. I was at the thing at City Hall today. I'm way in the background, but a little. I have the mute on. Sorry.
Okay.
But maybe it's like, God, look at this. I.
California people, Bill, you get all the fun.
Okay.
Ken, do you have anything significant to add, or does that pretty much sum things up?
Sums it up.
Okay. So I think where we are is I will make a brief report on Thursday along with a consolidated budget, basically saying that to all appearances we have a $500,000 employee dishonesty policy. Well, I'll leave it at that, unless we get more requests referred to the Finance Committee.
This is Ken. I just want to thank Jim for the research he did.
Yes, you. Thank you, Jim.
Me too. He did. I did a bunch of it myself, and I talked to some people, and I came up with contradictory information. And when I ran into summer, it's like, okay, phew, I don't have to go down that road. This is very complicated stuff. And insurance companies play a game that, none of us can understand. Unless you're on the other side of it. If you already have a policy, they'll throw in a lot of stuff that otherwise would cost more if it's just that policy.
Mm-hmm. That's true, and all of these things have to be balanced. The question is just whether we need to continue or not, and I think we should stop right here until we get more information.
Bill for the stack.
Plenty to do without people doing redundant work. So, thank you, committee, and I guess we're not done. So, Bill followed by R. Paul.
Yeah, I also want to thank especially Jim for the research. I'm not sure what, the original question was about bonding. I don't know exactly what that covers or if it covers anything other than what Jim talked about. What Jim found sounds great, but I was going to suggest that if you could email us the details so that at least those of us on the PNB, if it comes up, we can answer questions about it. And also, what Kim mentioned, that what Summer said about another insurance policy, maybe we need to get details on that and see what it covers exactly. Maybe if Jim would be willing to look at that, that would be wonderful and compare with what he found from the agent in Houston.
Okay, just to jump in, Jim did email the information that he found from Houston. It was some time ago. I'm sure he can email it again, but he did do so.
Okay, thanks.
And I'm guessing that the other policy is our general liability policy. That's kind of where that would be added on.
Yeah.
So, like I said, probably someone will have to pull the policy and take a look at it. But that's okay.
Look at things like deductibles and exclusions and whatever it covers.
Right. Our call was next.
Oh, okay. I just need the details. For $100,000 coverage, it's a $50 initiation fee, and how much a year?
$181.
$181, okay. That's for five employees. Yeah, for 5 employees, and they call that what? What do they call it?
It's a fidelity bond for a social organization /i.e. nonprofit.
Right. Well, we are a nonprofit. And, $100,000 is a good amount. That said, several of our stations are handling, $3 million plus per year. So it's a small portion of the total amount of cash that's passing through the organization, which is some $14 million. But it's better than nothing. So we'll see. Okay, so that's where we are with that. Again, I think I'm just going to very briefly say something at the PNB and then see what ensues from that, if anything. And I don't think anyone here should do any more work on it at this point.
This is Kim.
Yeah.
I would just like to add that the guy that I spoke to was under the understanding that you get a bond for a specific sort of project thing. You get bonded for this development or for this project. But it's not your general company kind of insurance policy, which is what we really I really need. I mean, I think the suggestion of an employee getting bonded came from not understanding what a bond is.
I understand, and I'm inclined to agree. And hopefully the liability insurance covers it. We'll see. Okay, so this is our last item on the agenda, famously known as the Kim thing, otherwise known as accounting protocols. And I'm going to let Kim motivate it. You said it kind of came in two pieces, so why don't you start by motivating the first piece?
Okay. We have two issues going on here. One is we have a programmer who gets these grants from his employer. I mean, Ken might understand it a little bit more. We both looked at it. So these grants come to the station, and then this programmer can pull expenses off this grant for his own use. I think it seems legitimate. I don't know. But the issue is it's getting put on our operating budget. So it makes it look like we're getting this extra grant income, and then, you know, the expenses are in the expenses, but they're not going to KPFK. They're going to, you know, this programmer. So it's really bad and misleading accounting. And I'm not even getting into the disclosure part of that, which is, you know, maybe another committee, but that's another part of this. It's, you know, not getting dealt with.
But okay. I have comments about how you handle that, but okay. Anybody else want to weigh in?
Well, this is Ken. I can weigh in on it. Some people consider mortgage tax deduction, where you don't pay taxes on the interest you pay for your mortgage. Some people consider it moral. Some people consider it immoral. Some people don't like Social Security. Some people do. This is a phenomenon. If a guy's got a program and he's getting support in terms of a grant from somebody, and they know that they're spending that money for his cost that he's incurring for doing the program, you can't say that that should not occur. Or if you want to, you'll be excluding, you'll be discriminating against a lot of programmers, okay, who are getting support outside of the station. And if they may likely be doing as volunteer unpaid programmers. So if they get somebody, if I'm doing a DJ on Filipino music from the 1950, that's my program, and I'm getting donations from the Philippine community because they support that, and that goes towards me buying records, towards me hiring archivists, towards me hiring assistants to do social networking. I don't think we can legitimately close the door on that. What we need to have is transparency. The case that Kim is talking about is very transparent. The guy, I don't endorse his program or anything, but the guy is turning in all the documentation and all the expenses. So the key thing here is, to me, is transparency. I'm not sure the right fiscal policy in terms of whether it goes through our accounting, if it's legitimate, tax-deductible donations, if it's targeted towards a certain program, if there's a danger of editorial control, which is not necessarily, that's not necessarily true. But I think the key thing is transparency, because other programmers direct people to go to their website, and on their website they say, you can please make donations. So people do that, and that's not that transparent, because we don't know what amount of traffic is going through their website. But that doesn't go through the station's finances. So it's a large area, but the key thing I'm concerned about is to not have an arcane or archaic viewpoint of, like, money is bad. people shouldn't support radio programs or, you know, or something like that. You have to leave the door open for different methods of support. And as long as it doesn't compromise the mission or lead to editorial control, I think we have to face that challenge and not deny people who are creative in terms of getting their support. In this case, he's getting, he works for, let's say it was GE or whoever it is, and they have a program that if you do 30 hours of volunteer work a week, we'll contribute $500 towards that nonprofit. Whatever it is, you know, it could be a soup kitchen, it's a radio program, that's fine. You got coworkers to come in to help with the programming. They say they did 30 hours, then they get X bucks from that corporation. So you might not like it, but it's legitimate.
Okay. This is him again.
Bill for the stack.
Okay, I hear all of you on the stack. I had wanted to be on the stack. Is it okay if I go?
Yeah.
Okay, let me do that, and then we'll go right through the rest of the stack. I think there's two areas of concern. One is just bookkeeping, and I don't mean concern as something bad, just concern as something to think about. The first is just to make sure...
Point of information, a point of personal privilege. Ken,
yeah,
I think
it's not
you need to be on mute, or is it you, Tracy?
It was me.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that's much better. Okay,
much better.
So I think there's just two things to kind of eyeball here, and I don't think that, and I agree with Ken that nothing is necessarily wrong, and I agree with Kim that it does matter how you keep track of it. The first thing, of course, is that we don't take underwriting, so obviously no promotional services can be offered by the program to the donor, and I don't see any implication by anybody that that's happening, so good. The second thing is really just bookkeeping. There's a way to account for that that doesn't blow up your income, and it's called a restricted fund. And what you do is that you bring it in through your bookkeeping, not as income, but as a liability. And the reason that you do that is that this money is not the station's to spend on anything that it wants. It's specific money that's going to be used for specific expenses. And what you do is when you book those expenses, period, when the person submits receipts and those expenses are going into the books, and you pull income to pay for those expenses directly out of the liability account. And what that prevents you from doing is showing more income than you actually have. And that's sort of just the basic bookkeeping scenario. And if you do that, then you're not inflating your income, and you're not booking extra expenses without the income to account for it. It's a direct flow through the books. And I don't know if that's happening, but basically I think, Kim, what you need to do is check is if these funds are held in a restricted account until the month when they are directly expensed. And that may not be happening. I don't know. I would need to see your profit and loss. And you would need to identify for me how much income this is and where it is and what expenses it's connected to. But I think that's the way to bookkeep to address Kim's concerns. And that should be pretty standard full-charge bookkeeping practice. So you might want to check and see if there is a restricted fund that corresponds to whatever amount of funds are being held against the expenses this programmer incurs. And that's it for me. And I heard R. Paul and Bill on the stack, followed by Kim a second time around. So let's go to R. Paul and then to Bill.
Okay. This sort of thing, there are various legal requirements around it, not just accounting ones, but legal requirements regarding the FCC and others. Underwriting is not necessarily always the bright line. Since we're a nonprofit and we're on the radio and all of that stuff, you have to be careful about the connections people have to whatever might be funding them. If a program is being sponsored the sponsorship must be stated on the air, as far as I know. So if you work for, you know, United Widgets, and you go on the air, and United Widgets is funding you so you can go out and, you know, cover the Petunia show, so that you can get the recorder and go out and record it and come back and all of that stuff, you have to say, at very least, this segment of the program covering the Petunia show is sponsored by United Widgets. I mean, in fact, when we go on the air, we say we're listener-sponsored. We're actually making an official legal declaration. It's not just a slogan. That's a requirement from the FCC, and there are also problems that can come up. I know this from a certain radio station I'm familiar with, where you have to be careful of the radio station's operation inuring to the benefit of folks without, you know, within the nonprofit area. In other words, if somebody is, it can be complicated. Somebody's employed by a company. It's possible their employment, if they're getting what is really underwriting, sponsorship, may be connected to being able to put stuff on the air, in which case you start having problems. For instance, here's the classic example for radio stations is Joe Blow is on the air. Joe Blow also is a DJ at Club Whoopi over the weekend. If Joe Blow goes on the air and starts pushing, hey, Club Whoopi is having this great theme party over the weekend, you should come, that is a violation that's called plugola. It's related to the old payola stuff. Payola also shows up as a possible problem in this type of scenario. And as I said, it can be kind of complicated, and there are a number of legal restrictions regarding what you can do and how you can do it. And I am hoping that people are paying, that management at the station is paying very close attention to this and not allowing law violations to happen, because this could affect, this could not only result in fines for the station from the FCC, also for the programmer from the FCC, it could also affect the not-for-profit status of the Pacifica Foundation. So I think that, I'm hoping that management knows all about this, all of this is being disclosed on the radio every time, and, you know, people are on top of this stuff.
Well, okay, I have some comments on that. Let's go to Bill. He's next. Bill?
Sorry, I was had a mute. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with what our Paul was going to say. He said part of what I was going to say. But I also believe, now I'm not an attorney, but I remember reading that underwriting actually is required to be disclosed. It's by federal law, I believe. And that if you're accepting money, perhaps other things, at least money, to help produce a program, you're supposed to disclose it on the air. That's what underwriting is. And then there's restrictions on what the form of the underwriting can be. You know, you can't sound like a commercial in certain ways. But, I think you're incorrect, Tracy. I think it is underwriting. If it's to help produce a show, that's what underwriting is. I know at KPFT we don't have underwriting for specific programs, but we do allow some nonprofit organizations to provide financial support, and it's disclosed on the air. It's an announcement. It'll say, you know, KPFT is brought to you in part by blah, blah, blah. You know, the West Houston Baha'i community, that we had a animal rights organization a few months ago. We've had a Houston local arts organization. It doesn't run right at specific programs, but I mean, they want to have the announcement, but it's also, I think, required by the FCC, and I think somebody should check on that.
Kim.
Okay, let's go to Kim, and to Ken, and then to me. Go ahead, Kim.
First of all, as for the accounting, like I said, it was just being put under grants. Grants in, and then expenses out. So it was not being done in any way, which is why I brought this up. And I think we just took it off the budget for this year. And I, you know, I can show you what we have, but somebody needs to tell, you know, somebody at K that we need to do this differently once we decide how it should be done. now, the fact is, this guy works at Time Warner. I don't know in what department. This grant comes from Time Warner. He has a music show. Time Warner has a record company. So I don't think there's any quid pro quo. His show is on in the middle of the night. I have no idea if he favors Time Warner artists, but that would seem to be something that needs to be disclosed. We get a grant from Time Warner in order to help pay for the expenses for this show. Like I said, there are two parts of it. One is just the accounting, and one, the second is, you know, the disclosure part. So, you know, as for the accounting, I do not think it's done correctly. And, you know, according to what you're saying, Tracy, I mean, does that mean it just goes somewhere below the budget, you know, at the end of the budget just to show this? Because it just shouldn't be going through our budget. And, yes, I think there are issues. They're using our 501c3 in order for this guy to get expenses for his personal use. And I don't know if that's legal or what. I don't know.
Point of information for Kim. Point of information for Kim. You say his personal use. Are you talking about he goes out and buys sodas?
I don't
know. He's using it for production.
He's itemizing.
Ice, you showed me the paperwork where he itemized his costs, and they were all related to production. It's a legitimate cost. He can squeeze in there paying for a babysitter so he can come down and produce the show. You know, he can't squeeze in buying a beret or taking a trip to France, maybe. There's got to be some wiggle room.
Okay, guys,
let's try to avoid the back and forth. Kim, wait, because you've already spoken twice. Ken, is that all you wanted to say, or do you have something else to say?
Oh, no. I just had two things to say other than that.
Okay, so we
can come back on that. So the thing is, there's two other shows that are definitely, we have had a car show on there probably for 30 years. And all they talk about is big muscle cars. Now, again, we're not aware of any kind of kickbacks or payroll, but it's what we need is full disclosure. And then we definitely have a guy who has a job at an embassy. He's got a music program, and he only plays music from that country. So it's an indirect perk that he stays on the air. You know, he only plays music from that country, and he works at that embassy. So whether or not they're paying him directly or, you know, well, he keeps his job because that's a benefit that he provides to the company. But what Paul said is absolutely true. If you have a corporation that's supporting the production of a program that because they believe they support what that program is broadcasting, that should be disclosed. It would be nice if, you know, if it's known that the Communist Party is paying for the microphones for a program or the CIA is paying for, you know, dinner for the host. We want disclosure. And but again, it's a question of having proper, where we're all completely ignorant is, what's the right way to do this in terms of counting and legal? So
okay.
That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. I'm going to call on myself for my second time, then I'll go to Kim. Does anyone else want to be on the stack?
Campbell just arrived. I was at a town hall meeting and having so much fun.
Okay. Welcome, Campbell.
Thank you.
All right. So me. Okay. So let me do the accounting stuff first.
because that's probably, okay, I remember that conversation, and that was the correct thing to do. Where it goes in the financial statements going forward is rather than having an account called grants, what you need is a restricted fund, which is a liability account that holds that money, and you access that liability account and pull that income out in order to pay the direct expenses when you get them in, and not until then. Because this isn't income that you can spend on just anything. This is income you can only spend on those particular expenses. And until those expenses are on the books, it's not income. It's just something sitting around in a pile that you can't use. So that's the accounting mechanism that accounts for restricted funds and keeps you from puffing up your income inaccurately with money that you can't actually spend. So we were right to take it out of the budget. And if there's a misunderstanding about how to set up a restricted fund as a liability account, we can talk about that privately, but that's how it should be done. And I don't recall seeing those kinds of accounts in KPFK's bookkeeping, so my guess is that the bookkeeper just doesn't know how to do it. And I think a lot of our business managers don't know how to do it, but that's the way to do it. Okay. About the Plugola sponsorship, Payola underwriting conversation, which is a big one. My understanding of underwriting is that underwriting is a contractual agreement to provide a certain amount of promotion in response to a specific amount of financial support. So underwriting per se is a disclosed contract for a specific kind of promotion. When you're talking about unofficial underwriting, then you're talking about Plugola and Payola, and you're talking about FCC violations. For us, it's a problem because we don't do above board official underwriting. We don't accept underwriting per se. So there, in a sense, there is no legal above board way for us to provide any kind of quid pro quo. In other words, anything that we do in that direction has to be Plugola, has to be Payola, because we don't do anything else. So basically the check that you have to make, and I think there's two things that you can do. Disclosure is good, but essentially there has to be an iron wall between any promotion of the entity that's providing the money, any at all. Now, I don't think that working at an embassy and playing the music of that country is direct promotion. If, however, you said something about the wonderful services that the embassy provides to the Armenian community on the program, and you worked for the Armenian embassy, then there would be a problem. But the entity that's giving the money is the Armenian embassy. It's not, per se, the entire country of Armenia. When you're talking about Time Warner, there would have to be some indication that Time Warner artists were being favored or that there were favorable references to Time Warner on the program. That could get you cited. So it's important to have an employee to have a conversation with that volunteer that there is no mentioning of Time Warner on the air above and beyond perhaps a disclosure that Time Warner plays a part in supporting the program. That's pretty much what I would say. It just seems to me that since we don't take underwriting, any on-air benefit derived from the program that is specific to the donor is by nature Plugola. It can't be anything else or Payola. So there simply needs to be kind of an iron wall there when we accept this kind of support. There are no on-air mentions of the donor in any capacity ever. And that at least is nice and straightforward. So that's my understanding. Who was next on the stack? Somebody was. I think it was Kim. Is that right?
I guess.
Hello?
I guess,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to hold the silence. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah, I suspect that you're correct that the business manager, number one, either doesn't know how to make a restricted account shown as a liability, or in general, management just simply does not pay attention to any of this stuff. So it's probably both of those. So perhaps, I don't, you know, I mean, maybe we should have a private call about how to inform management to do this.
Yes,
because they won't take it on my say-so, you know, particularly.
Yeah.
And, you know, the underwriting thing, as far as I'm concerned, we need a strict policy. It needs to be in writing, and we need to give it to management, as this is what you need to know. This is what you need to know and enforce, because I hear violations all the time. Nobody's watching at our station. Nobody cares. So,
I think when we're talking about a programmer's manual and we're talking about personnel policies, that's where that factors in. So that may be, need to be part of that project, which is underway,
right,
no matter what Ken thinks. It is.
Right.
So, I think that's where that would go.
Right, which is why I kind of said that I didn't want to get into that area of it today because, you know, we're kind of winding up where we are. You know, kind of, we've discussed it and we're like, well, it needs to be national. So I was mostly concerned with, you know, the actual accounting of this and how to get that fixed at this station, because it's just kind of hanging out there. Nobody is really aware that this money is not doing, you know, where it's supposed to be.
I think that we can do that privately, and we should, and we may be able to loop in some of the finance staff at the national office as well to give it a little extra ring of authority.
Right.
But I think we should.
Right.
So, okay, so let's put that on our list of things to do, and we'll do it. Okay, can we move on to part two? Does anyone else have a burning desire to weigh in on this?
Our ball fast.
Okay, go for it.
Very fast. Tracy said a lot of stuff that, you know, is it, but I think it's rather more restrictive than that. You know, and the real thing is you need to talk to the FCC lawyer people about this kind of thing because it's pretty specific, and I think one of the people who practices law in this every day is probably the one to really discuss about it. And my impression is that Pacific has had a policy about this for decades, and if the general managers don't know it, oh, good grief. All right, that's it.
Okay, this is Tracy. I will say that I've gone to workshops on this, so I'm not talking totally out of my ass, but I take your point that, you know, that I'm not an FCC attorney, and whatever becomes codified in personnel policy, because, of course, part of the problem is that we don't have anything codified in our current personnel policy, so this is all ad hoc, should absolutely run through the FCC attorney. I totally agree. Okay. Kim, I think the last item is your part two, so why don't you go ahead and motivate part two?
Okay, we had a situation where I saw an expense, and I asked the general manager, and he said, oh, that was to build a website for a programmer, like her own website. And I said, what? oh, yes, we got a donation. She got a donation. She got a major donation, and this was part of it. I did say, oh, what other personal expenses might be coming out of this money, and I didn't get a response. But this does not seem proper. If somebody wants to build their own website, that should not be coming through KPFK's budget.